In 1962, late on a Wednesday afternoon, a Greyhound bus arrived in Hyannis, Massachusetts. The doors open at the bus stop closest to the Kennedy compound. Lila Mae Williams and her nine youngest children stepped onto the pavement. Silent TV footage captured the moment. In the recording, Lila Mae looks immaculate despite a three-day journey from Arkansas. She's wearing a black shiny dress, a triple string of pearls, white high heels. She is dressed to meet the Kennedys.
She had been promised she was going to the Kennedys, where the Kennedys lived at. She was going to have a job and she was going to be able to support her family.
It was all a scam, all a hoax, and it was just embarrassed the Kennedys, embarrassed the president.
Mickey and Betty Williams are two of Lila Mae's children. Now in their 60s and 70s and living in the Boston area, they were 5 and 18 when the family became reverse freedom riders. They were convinced or tricked by white segregationists into boarding a northbound bus.
When they put us on that bus and they brought us to the Kennedy compound, they was almost saying to the Kennedys, here you go, here's, you know, calling them, you know, niggas, you know, here you go, here they are.
The Kennedys were not there to welcome the Williams family. There was no permanent housing, as had been promised, no jobs. In 1962, Lila Mae Williams and about 200 other African Americans were simply dropped in northern cities. They were pawns in a segregationist game. It all started the year before, when segregationists like Ned Touchstone were incensed by the Freedom Rides.
Sending down busloads of people here with express purpose of violating our laws, fomenting confusion, trying to destroy 100 years of workable tradition and good relations between the races.
Touchstone joined George Singelman and others in answering the Freedom Rides with the reverse Freedom Rides. They'd use the same weapon, the Greyhound bus, and send African Americans north. Then they'd see if the North liked it when blacks were in their backyard.
The ultimate accomplishment, of course, is to focus attention on the hypocrisy of the Northern liberals.
The ploy to expose the North's racism grabbed headlines around the world, and Singelman was often on TV.
They have been crying the sing-song in behalf of the Negroes throughout the nation. And of course, now when it comes time for them to put up or shut up, they have shut up.
Singelman orchestrated the reverse freedom rides through local segregationist groups called citizens' councils. They were basically
the Ku Klux Klan without the hoods and the masks.
Clive Webb is at the University of Sussex in England. He says he's the type of historian who wants to wash his hands after he's been in the archives. He specializes in studying racists. He says the citizens' councils attempted to cloak segregation in respectability.
They could be members of the police force, they could be bankers, businessmen, and their like.
Local chapters bought bus tickets and fanned out across the South to enlist black riders.
They targeted people who were either welfare recipients or prison inmates, people who were placing a burden, as they saw it, on public resources.
The vision had been to send thousands north, but the reality was far smaller. Several hundred African Americans, mostly from Arkansas and Louisiana, accepted the northbound tickets. They went to New York, New Hampshire, Los Angeles, Idaho, the list goes on. The largest number, nearly 100, went to the Kennedys' summer White House in Hyannisport. That was far, far away from the Williams home in rural Arkansas. Betty and Mickey Williams remember growing up in Arkansas as both idyllic and tragic. There was the joy of fishing in the pond out back and the trauma of relatives dying without a doctor to visit.
I remember the flooding in the house, snakes underneath the beds. I mean, that's how we were poor. We were really poor.
At the time, Arkansas was segregated and the Williams family was confined to the black side of town. Betty says she didn't know anyone who was white.
Never thought about why we separated like this. Why we can't go to school together, why we can't sit and eat together. I never even questioned that.
She didn't question it, but her mother was aware of the forces that swirled outside of their three-room house.
My dad always had three pictures on a wall growing up in the South. John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert F. Kennedy.
My mother was very much a Kennedy person, very much.
The Kennedys were seen as being sympathetic to African Americans, even though they were sometimes slow to move on issues of civil rights. While Martin Luther King Jr. spoke out against the reverse freedom rides, the warning never made it to the Williams family.
My mom, though, when she came to the North, she was going to have a better life for her children, better jobs, better housing, better everything for all of us.
Everything turned out to be nothing. One account from the Times suggests it wasn't only empty promises. Some segregationists threatened to take families off the welfare rolls if they didn't board the buses. Betty and Mickey Williams only learned after their mother's death that their family's journey was part of a larger scheme. They don't know if she was coaxed or coerced, but they do know their mother was grasping for anything that might help her children.
Everything that a mom could do, everything within her power, everything within her reach, my mom did it.
According to a newspaper from the time, Lela Mae Williams told the segregationists that she couldn't take her children north until they finished the school year. Class let out on a Friday. On Sunday, segregationist Amos Guthridge sent a car to pick up Lela Mae and her 9 youngest kids, ages 2 to 14. Guthridge drove them from the family house 150 miles to Little Rock's bus terminal. On their way, they stopped and Guthridge treated the kids to ice cream and root beer.
They arrived in his station wagon. All of them kind of jammed into this station wagon.
Ernie Dumas was, at the time, a reporter for the Arkansas Gazette. Guthridge had told the local news outlets that he'd be having a press conference.
And so when he was there, he made a little grinning speech. Now, these fine people, this wonderful woman and her fine little children.
Guthridge paused, and Dumas says he thinks he saw Guthridge wink at his fellow segregationists.
We're going to send them up to Massachusetts, and the Kennedys and those fine people up there are going to take care of them and give them a better life.
In silent TV footage, Lela Mae is focused. The kids are giddy. One plays with a well-loved rabbit stuffed animal. The family has almost no luggage. Everything was going to be taken care of. Lela Mae Williams herds her children onto the bus, toward the back of the bus, and then onward toward a promise that was a lie. In May 1962, a crowd gathered in Hyannis, awaiting a Greyhound bus. Off stepped the first reverse freedom rider, David Harris. In a suit and tie, he was a 43-year-old African-American Army veteran. He'd been sent by Southern segregationists to the bus stop closest to the Kennedy compound. In the months to come, the spectators disappeared, but the Greyhound buses kept arriving.
The first question that most of the arrivals asked was, "Where is President Kennedy?" We were told that he was going to meet us at the bus.
The president didn't meet them, but Margaret Moseley did. In archival tape, the late Moseley, who lived in Hyannis, remembers that summer.
Most of the people who came had only a shopping bag with perhaps one change of clothing. No money, knowing nobody.
What they did know was that they'd been given a free bus ticket. They'd been promised that jobs and housing were waiting, and the Kennedys would be there to help. It was all a lie. Many of the reverse freedom riders were single mothers with lots of children. 8 kids, 9 kids, 11 kids. Moseley remembers one of the kids asking,
"Where are the cotton fields?" I said, "We have no cotton fields here." He said, "Well, what am I going to do to find employment? I can chop cotton. I don't know how to do anything else."
Moseley had recently helped found the local chapter of the NAACP, and she'd fought civil rights battles her whole life. But as she neared her death in 1997, she said she still remembered the reverse freedom rides with a shudder.
"It was one of the most inhuman things that I have ever seen."
"If it takes 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, 5 or 10 years, we will continue it till the white people up there tell those politicians we are through with this foolishness about civil rights and things that you're using for political purposes."
That's segregationist Amos Guthridge of Arkansas in a TV interview from 1962. He helped organize the reverse freedom rides in retaliation for the freedom rides, where civil rights activists the summer before had traveled throughout the South to integrate bus terminals and seating on buses. The idea of the reverse freedom rides was simple. When large numbers of African Americans show up on Northerners' doorsteps, the North would not be able to accommodate them. they would not want them.
We're going to find out if people like Mr. Ted Kennedy, and the Kennedys, all of them, really do have an interest in the Negro people, really do have a love for the Negro, and a desire to help him.
It was a test the North was meant to fail. But by some measures, it backfired. A handful of ordinary people in Hyannis worked hard to help the Southern families. And the callousness of the segregationists was obvious. Many Southerners worried it was hurting their image. The scheme ended a handful of months after it began, struggling to find funds and recruit riders. But even when it was over, those families were still 1,000 miles from home.
It has been like a struggle, a really hard struggle.
Betty Williams was 18 and 8 months pregnant when she became a reverse Freedom Rider. Now 75 and living in the Boston area, she still thinks back to that summer when segregationists in Arkansas sent her family north and when a small group of Hyannis residents were ready to receive them. Religious leaders and the NAACP convinced the local community college to open its dorms and the nearby Air Force Base to open its barracks. The local jail provided bedding.
They all was very nice to my mother. They was nice to my family.
But despite the welcome, Betty says things weren't easy.
I remember I used to go out and I used to never smile that much. I never smiled. I don't know why that was. I never smiled.
While the Williams family was adjusting, the country was debating. Some compared the reverse Freedom Rides to Nazis deporting the Jews. Others delighted in watching the North squirm. But the Kennedy family largely tried to avoid the topic. President John F. Kennedy was asked about it.
Do you have any comment on the so-called reverse Freedom Rides?
Yes, well, I think it's a rather cheap exercise in... this country, people moving every day by the thousands, 25% of our...
He hemmed and hawed and ended up saying the South shouldn't be defined by the reverse Freedom Rides. But it did define the Williams family. Like many of those sent to Hyannis, the Williams family moved to Boston in search of work. Things they'd never experienced in their tiny southern town began to define their lives. Drugs, jail, neighbors who didn't know or care about them... And then there were things that were familiar, racism. In Boston, the Williams children experienced the worst of the school busing crisis. Betty says she watched her mother mourn.
Tried with every ounce of strength that she had to try to hold this family together. She used to just cry. She used to just cry.
As for the next generation, many are still learning the details of the story. Jamal Williams, one of Betty's sons, says he's been struck by just how hard his grandmother and mother fought for a better life.
To see the things that they've gone through and see the joy and happiness that they still possess is amazing.
It's something he tries to remember when he sees divisions within the country become inflamed. Historian Clive Webb of the University of Sussex in England says for him, some of today's politics are reminiscent of the reverse Freedom Rides.
In 1962, what was happening was the actions of a political fringe group. And in 2019, it's the federal government.
Mr. President, yeah. Can you tell us your plans about sanctuary cities and illegal migrants that you tweeted about?
Well, you know, the...
President Trump's idea of putting undocumented immigrants on buses and dropping them off in so-called sanctuary cities made Webb think back to segregationists like Amos Guthridge in 1962.
They want more people in their sanctuary cities? Well, we'll give them more people. We can give them a lot. We can give them an unlimited supply.
We're going to find out if people like Mr. Ted Kennedy and the Kennedys, all of them, really do have an interest in the Negro people, really do have a love for the Negro, and a desire to help him.
And let's see if they're so happy. They say we have open arms. They're always saying they have open arms. Let's see if they have open arms.
While there's not evidence the Trump administration has enacted the policy, the president told a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, that he was implementing the plan.
I'm proud to tell you that was actually my sick idea, but so was it.
But Clive Webb says, remember.
The white conservatives who were behind that campaign then actually underestimated the decency of many ordinary people.
And the reverse Freedom Riders showed just how long the ripple effects can last and how resilient their families can be. For WCAI, I'm Gabriela Emanuel.